Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 77 for October 3rd, 2014. I'm Trevor Furlott.
And I'm Matthew McClatchy.
And Owen's not here this week.
Yep.
Or maybe we did that in the wrong order, I don't remember. Yeah, no, sorry, Trevor is off. He called in sick.
He's also not here.
He didn't call in sick. I'm just kidding. No, he couldn't make it this week. He had some sort of one of his friend's parents died or something like that, I think. So our condolences to them, of course, and hopefully everything goes as smoothly as it can in that regard. But Trevor will be back next week, we hope, and he actually did leave some notes here, which we'll be including in the show, so you'll get to hear from him through us.
So, right, vicariously.
That's right. So don't hit that delete button yet. Wait, Trevor is coming, sort of.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, Owen, let's start off with you. What did you do this week?
Okay. This week I went hunting once.
That's right, because opening day this week, October 1st.
So normally, opening day, October 1st, for me, means ducks and geese.
Right.
And this would be the first opening day, because of my job, that I've missed since I started hunting.
Wow.
Yeah.
But that was for ducks and geese.
But that's for ducks and geese, and I decided I would have to get out anyway to do something. So I, after supper, when I got home from work, I took my two oldest daughters and a shotgun, and we went for a little walk just out around the property and up some tree lines and around a cornfield and things like that.
So you didn't miss first day of hunting season after all?
Well, no, I guess I didn't. Yeah.
It was just
me, that was a walk with my kids. It wasn't really hunting.
It was just after an inferior species is all.
There you go. There you go.
And inferior they are. We're talking about grouse for people who don't know. And for people who don't know what grouse are, we're talking about partridge. Sorry, but yeah, they're actually grouse.
My daughters call them gross.
Gross, yes. Gross.
Looking for gross, right, Dad? Gross?
Close enough.
Yeah, so we saw one. We went up this tree line and there was a gap in it, and I suggested that we cross this gap and walk back down the same tree line, just because why not?
Yep.
And as soon as we crossed, we walked by these, you know, just trees in the tree line, and we went through the gap, and immediately the one came out of those trees we just walked by.
Nice.
And flew across in front of me, and of course I pulled up and got one shot at it, but I couldn't, my girls were walking kind of beside me, so I couldn't swing around and get it as it relying because they were there. So one shot, missed, and away it went.
And that was the only shot you had on him, huh? And the only one you saw?
That's the only one we saw. So,
oh. Well, that's too bad.
So far this year, I'm 1-for-1.
Or 0-for-1.
I saw one, I missed one. No.
1-for-1. Well, if we're counting misses, then I'm going to rock this season.
Yeah, I usually do. I do really good every year.
It's kind of like golf, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
My daughter was quite disappointed that she couldn't bring her gun.
Right.
She wanted to carry her .22.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot little chipmunks, she said. Oh, yeah. She'd bring her little gun to shoot little chipmunks. But
not the big chipmunks, mind.
Not the big chipmunks.
Just the little ones.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, she was disappointed she couldn't bring it, but we had a good time. So
well,
that's what it's all about. And that was for actual guns, that was about it. But I should mention that yesterday, PressCheck Ventures got in a rather large order of G-code holsters and accessories. So I had great fun last night unpacking that. And
it's kind of like Christmas, huh?
It was digging through the boxes and opening packages and seeing how it all fits together and works, and trying my gun on into the, you know, very different style of mounts.
So here's the thing, folks. If you buy G-code, not only has Owen touched it, his gun's been in every holster.
Well, I don't know about every holster.
Even the Smith & Wessons, he was jamming his Glock in there.
If you're lucky enough to get one that I've handled, you know, if you order right away.
So. That's right.
I can put a little essence of Owen in each bag.
Spit in each one or something? I don't know.
I'll take the holster out and rub it all over my body.
There you go.
I'm sure that's a mental image everyone wants.
Everybody wanted that. Yep. No, that's getting going in the recycling bin, that one. Yeah. Delete!
So, yeah. So that's about everything that I did with guns. I did take my bow out tonight.
Oh, what'd you do with that?
Which is not related to guns at all, but
right.
I did take it out and
shoot it. It's related to hunting, and we're going to talk about hunting later on with Adriel. So, you know, I guess it sort of counts.
Yeah. No, so I took it out and shot a little bit with it, just, you know, 10 yards or just up close, just getting used to the draw, trying to figure out where my anchor point actually is.
Right.
Things like that. Because I've probably only shot, I could probably, no, not quite. I could count on one hand the number of times I've taken it out to shoot.
Right.
And so I need a lot more practice with it just to figure out where my anchor point is.
And this is the hand you lost three fingers on, right, in that horrible plumbing accident?
Yeah. I had it bitten off by some mutant sludge.
Right.
yeah, so anyway, that was kind of fun and shot it a bit. I've got a little more work to do to it. The more I read, the more I realize I have some things to add and change just to make it more for me.
Right.
I think it worked for what the person had it for, but for what I want it for, like a few things I need to change. So yeah, that was about it for me.
Cool.
Trevor, what'd you do?
well, Trevor, he loaded up some 357 and some 38 Special Plus P jacketed hollow points. Yeah, that's, there's a little bit more Trevor and listener feedback you guys will get later, but that's it for now. We're going to go into what I did with guns and hunting. Yes, because like we said, 2 days ago was opening day here in New Brunswick. And see, I've been on call lately for my work. So if they don't call in the morning, if they don't call by 8:30, basically I've got the day off. And so October 1st came around and they didn't call. So I'm, you know, I get up, I'm all groggy. I get, you know, downstairs and get some toast. And I'm upstairs in the computer and I'm doing some stuff. And then it hits me. It's October 1st. So I jump up out of my chair and I tear across the room and I'm grabbing my shotgun. I'm getting it. I've only got 4 shells left for my shotgun. Oh, this is a travesty. And I'm
that is a travesty. Shame on you.
Well, no, I've got other ammo for it, just not hunting ammo.
Oh.
You know, slugs and buckshot don't do so well on the grouse. Well,
no,
they work great for killing
they
it.
They work great.
You can't eat nothing afterwards, basically, is what happens. So
yeah.
I'm looking for my hunting vest. I try to find my hat. Turns out my hat was in the pocket of my hunting vest, so that took me a little while to figure out. Then when I pick up my vest, it's heavy. I'm like, oh yes, ammo from last year. It's all 20 gauge, so no, it's not ammo from last year. So anyway, I had to go into town and I had to get some stuff before I could go hunting. So I didn't get out into the woods until 12:30 or 1 o'clock. And so I was like, oh, you know, I've kind of missed the morning, but whatever, I'll go out and drive down some old logging trails and four-wheeler trails and stuff anyway. So I'm just kind of cruising along, and I've been out on my four-wheeler lately, just kind of tooling all over the place, and I haven't seen any birds all summer. So I really have not had much hope for this season yet. For grouse, it was just kind of like, whatever, if I see something, I see something, you know. I'm not at work, I'm in the woods in my truck with my shotgun, so it's a good day already. It's kind of my attitude at this point. So I'm driving along, and I got their windows down. I'm only going like 3-4 kilometers an hour, because what I'll do is I'll go down old logging trails, and whenever I see like a smaller trail, I'll park a truck and get out and go for a walk and then come back and move to the next spot. So I'm just kind of tooling along, and a bird flushes just right beside my door. I'm like, okay, I guess this is where I get out and walk. So turn the truck off, grab my gun, load it up, and start off into the woods. And the bird didn't fly 10 feet, just kind of fluttered off into the brush there. I'm like, beauty. So I bring the shotgun up, and it's still on the ground. I'm like, whatever, I'll shoot this guy on the ground. I don't care. And just as I pull the trigger, it flushes. Like, like a half second before I pull the trigger, it flushes. And I probably took off one of his toes, but that was it. It just, I saw the hit right at its feet. It kicked up the dirt right where his feet were, and it took off into the woods, and I went tearing in after it, and I hunted that thing for probably half an hour, but he got away. So I didn't follow my own advice. Had I probably would have had him. I had my modified choke in. I should have had my open choke in. And had I had my open choke in, I probably would have got that guy. So it's like, it's probably going to be the only bird I see too. Stink, whatever. So anyway, I get back in the truck and I move on. And I see this nice little wooded path. And so I hop out of the truck and I start going down. And I go down. And it turns out it leads to this kind of stream, brook kind of thing. And while there, I see, do martens swim? Do we have marten in this area?
Or have what?
Marten.
Yes, I believe we have martens, but I'm not sure that if they swim or not.
Maybe it was a mink. Do mink swim?
I don't know
my weasels very well, I guess. But it looked sort of like some sort of weasel, but it was swimming in the brook. Was it a muskrat or something? I don't think it was a muskrat. It didn't look like a muskrat. It was much skinnier and longer than a muskrat would have been.
Yeah, probably so. a marten then.
Yeah, anyway, so it was sitting there, and it wasn't 3 feet away from me. And I didn't even see it. I just stepped down to the stream and looked around, and I was ready to turn around and head back. And all of a sudden, this little splash, and I looked down. Holy crap, there's a little varmint or little rodent right there at my feet. And I'm like, okay, what are you doing there, little buddy? And he swims across the stream and sits there and stares at me for a couple of minutes. I'm like, okay, whatever. So anyway, back up the trail, and this is what I generally do, and I'm not terribly bright. I don't learn from my mistakes because it happens to me all the time. I go down a trail all stealthy and quiet, and I got my gun up, and I'm ready to go. But whenever I walk back to the truck, my gun's always down, and I'm just trudging through the woods. I'm not being stealthy anymore. I just kind of walk back because the way I see it, I've already been down this trail. I didn't see anything. There's nothing here. It's not like something moved in after I left because, they don't do that. They would generally run. Well, it happens to me, like I said, a couple of times a season.
Every time it happens to me. Well, it happened to me yesterday.
Yeah.
Because I walked right by that spot and then turned.
Yeah, and then came back and then he flushed. And the same thing happened to me. And this thing flushed like 3 feet from me. I think I may have wet myself a little bit.
It doesn't matter how many years you hunt. That sound always scares you.
Oh my goodness. I didn't stop shaking for the adrenaline dump. Just boom. I'm like, wow. So my gun comes up. Safety comes off. It's on my shoulder. And I watched him fly through the trees. Like I saw him go, but I knew I didn't get a good shot on him. So I didn't even pull the trigger. But same thing. I went in after the woods or went in through the woods after him too and didn't find him anywhere either. So headed back to the truck and drove off to another spot. And so I found this really nice spot again. Looked really good. It had those little red berries all over the place, which they love to eat. So I hopped out and I'm walking along. And every now and then, this happens, quite a bit too. You get this kind of, they coo a little bit before they fly. And so I'm sitting and I hear it, but it's not close. It's like really, really, really faint. So I'm looking around trying to pinpoint because I know this bird's about to take off. And I'm looking and I'm looking. And then I hear, like, what the heck? It was like 25 yards away from me. It flushes. Like, you're an idiot. The last guy was like 3 feet from me and you're like 100 feet from me. Ah. So obviously he got away because I'm not taking a 25-yard shot through thick brush to try to get a bird. I wouldn't find him if I got him anyway. So anyway, at this point I was done. I was tired. I was hungry. I was thirsty. So unload the shotgun, get back in the truck, and I'm just driving back home. And I take this old logging trail that's kind of a shortcut between the two main roads where I live. And I'm driving along, and there's a grouse right in the middle of the road. I'm doing 50, and there is just sitting there. I come around a corner. There he is just sitting there. I'm like, sir! So I slam on the brakes. I'm like, okay, now he's going to fly away. Because I can't get out of my truck. There's no way I'll get out of my truck without him flying away. So I just sit there, and I'm like, whatever. You get a bye this time. Fly away. Go on. Go. No? Oh, all right then. So I get the shotgun, I find my ammo, and I quietly open the door. The truck's still running. I just put it in park. Quietly open the door. I don't even close the door. I just leave the door open. I grab the shotgun, line up on him, and he flushes. Ah, stupid bird. Flushes 3 feet into the weeds on the side of the road. I'm like, okay, this is going to be a little easier than I thought, and just shot him in the head.
Nice.
So he was like, I don't know, 10 yards away, not even. He just flushed into the weeds and looked at me. He's like, haha, you can't see me now. I'm like, yes, I can. So anyway, so I got my one bird. That was good. So yeah, it was fun hunting. I really enjoyed it. I didn't get back out today. I should have, but I processed wood instead because I figured I would like to stay warm this winter.
That is important as well.
Yeah. The other thing I did was I went to the range today too, though. The short barrel for my Beretta finally arrived. VIP Firearms, Sheldon is the guy's name. He's out in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. Apparently he's making them. He gets the 4-inch barrel, the illegal ones, because he has his prohibited device permit or whatever. He gets those, and then he bores out the... How does he do that? I forget how he does it. Anyway, he like bores it out and puts in like a barrel blank and a sleeve kind of thing and makes it to the right length, and it's rifling all the way through. It's, you know, it's really professional. I can't even tell where the seam is, where he mated the two parts. So it looks really good. There's a picture on my Facebook page if people want to go check it out. But the gun finally looks at least close to what it should look like instead of having that 6-inch monstrosity sticking out the front of the gun. So it's much more fun to shoot, much more fun to point. I took it to the range today. It is very accurate as it was before, if not a little bit more accurate. I was shooting horse flies off the berm with it at 25 yards, and yes, I was benched, wasn't offhand, and no, I wasn't hitting them every time. I got lucky a few times and nailed one, but most of the time it was, you know, I'd hit really close to it, and the bullet just kind of splattering would get the fly. It entertained me, so why not? I don't know if that counts as shooting wildlife at a range or not, but whatever, it happened, it's too late.
Well, you could just say they were domestic flies that you brought from.
That's right. It wasn't wildlife. They were house flies. They were trained in everything. I don't know. Anyway, it was fun. So let's move into some upcoming events. We don't have any, so let's move on to some news. Do you want to bring us the first news story here? And by first, of course, I mean only?
Sure. All right. Three women who burst into a fourth women's home with a baseball bat and possibly a hatchet.
They're not sure if it's a hatchet or an axe, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
No, I made that up. I have no idea.
Ended up in hospital themselves after the intended victim grabbed a knife and fought back.
Booyah! That's what
police
you do.
Police say all four women will face charges after the fracas.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, keep going.
Two calls came in reporting the incident to police just before 6 p.m. on Saturday. Police say they heard from one caller that a woman had been stabbed at a home in the 600 block of 13th Street, while a 911 call came from the same home, said that two people had broken into her home with a bat and a hatchet. Investigators say that they think three women broke into the home with a baseball bat and assaulted the woman inside. However, they only caused minor injuries that didn't require medical treatment. Then, at some point during the first assault, police say the initial victim grabbed a kitchen knife and dealt out some assaulting of her own. Three women who were attacking her with the bat all received slash and puncture wounds to their upper bodies and needed medical treatment. Police say, though none of them remain in hospital. All four were arrested, although they've all been released from custody with conditions. They're all to appear in Brandon Court on November 24th. 31-year-old Brandon woman who was initially attacked will face three counts of assault with a weapon, as well as three counts of aggravated assault. Meanwhile, a 19-year-old Brandon woman and two Sioux Valley women, one 29 and the other 40, will each face a single count of assault with a weapon.
So I wonder if what happened here is they broke in and started to assault her, and then when she fought back a little bit more than she should have. Now, hold on. I know. You can't fight back more than you should. I mean, you fight back. But here's the thing. Maybe she fought back and she continued to fight back after the threat had ceased.
Yeah. But
so
I mean,
maybe she,
really?
There was some retaliatory violence going on here as opposed to just self-defense.
Yes. Yes. That's the only thing I can figure, because I'm sorry. Even in Canada, if someone comes at me with a baseball bat and a hatchet,
you're allowed to stab them.
That's deadly force right there.
That is deadly force.
I don't know about you, but I can kill someone with a baseball bat.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, my little 22 arms don't quite have the oomph. But yeah, no, I know what you mean. If I had like a big, heavy one, maybe, I don't know.
Well, you hit someone in the head with a bat,
you're going to kill them.
It lights out.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, that's definitely deadly force. And she was 100% within her right to defend herself. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, if that's all she did, then these other charges against her are completely ludicrous. This should not, she should not be being charged. But what I'm suspecting happened was she continued to fight after the threat was gone. And
it would be interesting to know, it'd be interesting to know where the wounds that were inflicted on the three women were they in the back?
If they're all stabbed in the back, then you could probably say that, you know, that's probably not the way to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can't get somebody back because they hit you first, you know. Once they're done hitting you, you've got to stop hitting them. That's the way self-defense works.
Pretty much how the rules are.
Yeah. So, you know, bear that in mind if you get attacked by three ladies bearing a hatchet and baseball bat. You know, just hit them until they stop. Don't keep hitting them afterwards, I guess. I want to thank Manny from Winnipeg for sending in that show, or for that that story, actually. He says that it reminds him of the Ian Thompson case, which sort of does. If somebody, you know, breaks into your house and starts attacking you, you're allowed to fight back. That's it. Yep. Cool. Anyway, thanks very much for that. Let's go on to the main topic. We have a very special guest, special in not the way that we refer to ourselves as special. we don't think that he wears a helmet and takes the short bus to school, but we certainly do. And so it's nice to have somebody who might have just a bit more sanity than we do. Adriel, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, thanks, Matt. Really good, actually.
Good.
Wanted to get onto this show for a while, and finally the timing's right, and hunting season's just around the corner, so, you know,
I mean, there are only so many emails we can ignore before we have to have you on and we start to seem rude, right? So,
well, you know, emails and Facebook and, you know.
Well, then there was that one time you showed up at my house, and you're like, Matt, and I'm like, no, go away. I'm kidding, of course.
Tell me one of that part, but okay, yeah.
Now you have a pretty famous blog. What's your blog?
It's huntinggearguy.com. It's just something I started just as just to play around with, you know, do a little bit of writing, kind of drive a little bit my work on photography and video and that kind of thing. I found that a lot of gun mags out of the States, they would kind of praise everything, even if they're kind of a piece of crap. Like, I don't know if you've seen now, but like a lot of the magazines in the States are given like high praise to the Remington R51.
That was the exact one I was thinking of. That's hilarious. Like the R51, huh? Yeah, that thing's awesome.
And then you look at all these YouTube videos of these guys like having big problems with them. It's like, man, what is the... There's a big disconnect between, you know, a lot of what happens in the industry and what's actually happening out there in terms of these things.
Well, there's a lot of commercialism involved in that, right? I mean, people are getting paid to say nice things. And so if you don't want to bite the hand that feeds you, which makes sense. I don't fault them for that. But at the same time, you really shouldn't say this is the next gun to have when in fact it isn't.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been having the same problems with a Savage PMAG that they recently got. And I mean, I knew there was going to be some accuracy issues getting into that. But sure enough, yeah, they came out and I couldn't get rid of them. I had to send it back to, I think they're going to rebarrel it and, I don't know, tune the trigger or something like that. So
what gun was that?
A Savage PMAG. It's in 17 WSM. It's like a varmint rifle kind of a thing.
Oh, that's that
cool
new
concept.
That's that new rimfire, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody can get ammo for.
You've got ammo out west here. The Winchester uses their blank, like nail firing blanks kind of thing to make them. So I figure, hey, they found out a way to activate one of their new ammo lines and make this ammo for us. So it's kind of cool, but it's too bad. You know, I just couldn't get the accuracy out of it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the thing with the 17 HMR and the 17 HM2. They were really touted for being really accurate, and they really were. And
so
I think a lot of people were really expecting this next one to be really accurate as well, and to hear that it's not, I guess that's not a good thing.
Maybe it's just teething problems, and they'll work it out. I mean, I've always expected better from Savage, and maybe that's just because I'm spoiled. Where most of their rifles, you get them, you get like a $300 axes, and you're shooting 1 inch or less at 100, no problem at all.
Yeah, I get a half inch easily at 100 with mine, and every now and then I get really close to a quarter. I can't quite get it, but I'm right there. I'm reloading, of course, and I'm doing doing that, you know, as precisely as I can. I wouldn't expect that from a hunting rifle, but it's really nice to see a really cheap rifle. And, you know, it just really goes to show that Axis really has their crap together.
Oh, man, we're totally spoiled these days. You think about it, you used to have to spend like a month or half a month's salary on a hunting rifle. And now we can spend $300. What is that, like two?
And it comes with a scope.
Yeah. what more do you want? Comes with a scope, comes with a stock that you can beat up. It gets less than an inch at 100 yards. Like, man, we are so spoiled these days.
All we need now is a little Oompa Loompa to carry it around for us while we walk through the woods. Carl, you listening, buddy? You want to come up to Canada?
Yeah, so, I mean, the act, like, I hope this discussion that we're going to have about hunting rifles isn't just Axis.
No, I would hope not.
That's kind of where I was seeing it going. But like, yeah. So when it comes to hunting rifles, like, what do you guys like to use, and maybe like, what game are you using for as well?
Well, let me just you know, break the trend right off the bat and say I use my Savage Axis. I really do. Yeah, I've got it in 223, and I use it for coyotes, groundhogs, crows that are on the ground. But basically, it's a varmint gun. I use it for anything smaller than a coyote, or, well, I suppose I could use it on a deer as well, but I just haven't gone deer hunting yet. So that's my go-to rifle if I'm going hunting, is my Savage Axis. And the reason why, it's pretty much the only hunting rifle I have. So,
well, that's a sweet caliber too for varmint hunting. I love 223. It's cheap. Yep. It's accurate. You got tons of range you can get out of it. And like 22-250 will give you a little bit more range, but it won't be cheap like a 223 will.
No, and the thing that really turned me off of the 22-250 is, yes, you get that extra speed, that extra power, but you lose your barrel life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I forget what somebody told me. It was like you can expect 5,000 good rounds out of a barrel, out of a 22-250, and you can expect close to 15,000 out of a 223. I can't remember if those numbers are right or not, but it's somewhere in those ballparks anyway. It's like three times the life for, you know, 700 foot per second slower. I think I can live with that.
Yeah, no doubt. No, the price difference on cases, like 223 is everywhere at the range. You can pick that stuff up,
yeah,
reload it, and get a nice accurate round for very little.
Yep, absolutely. What about you, Owen? What's your go-to hunting rifle?
Well, I'm a little bit old school when it comes to that stuff. Like,
you still
Matthew,
using the Brown Bess?
Yeah, I was. it's called an Adel-Adel, actually.
Oh. No. That's that stick thing, isn't it? Where you throw the stick with the stick.
A friend of mine actually has one of those. But anyway.
Is it covered in foam? If it's covered in foam, it doesn't count. I'm just saying.
No. If... I, like Matthew, I really have a limited number of hunting rifles. Once I get into the restricted thing, I kind of went crazy. And so I'm still mostly using my 30-30, a Winchester 94 30-30. And I'm taking deer with it, taking bear with it. Obviously, I'm not shooting crows or varmints with it here in New Brunswick, but... yeah, that's kind of my go-to. It's lightweight and decent capacity. For around here, the length of shot, the distance of shot that we deal with typically isn't greater than what that gun can handle.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're probably making your shots within 100 kind of thing with that, right?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, there would be a few occasions where we're in a bigger field or something like that where you might make a 200-yard shot, but generally... I mean, bear hunting, you're generally hunting off a stand, so you're within 30, 40 yards tops, and the deer I shot was 80 yards, and that was in a field. So it's not like out west in the mountains or something like that where you're shooting across canyons and shooting from one mountaintop to another mountaintop, you know.
And there's that Lever Revolution ammo that can really flatten that out, right?
Sorry, how did you pronounce that again?
Lever Revolution.
Sorry, we were giving Owen a hard time about that a couple weeks ago. Well, a couple months ago now, actually.
Yeah, no, that's what I use, and that is great stuff. Man, the first bear I shot with that ammo left a golf ball sized hole in the other side of it.
Sweet. Yeah, that's exactly what you want. And are you rocking the Buckhorn sights, or does it have like more standard sights on it?
It doesn't quite have, I know what you mean when you say the buckhorn sights. Mm-hmm. It's not quite that pronounced, but it's not like a conventional sight either. It's kind of halfway in between. I'm not sure what the actual name of the sights are that's on it. It is that more of that style of sight. Yeah.
Yeah. My dad's 3030 had those buckhorn sights on, and I hated those things. It's so hard to get a really fine, sight picture with them and know where that bullet's going to go. But, you know, within 100 yards, it'll do the trick kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I don't have any issues with it. I can shoot. It's one of those guns. It was my first rifle, mm-hmm. and I shot a lot with it because it was the only gun I had at the time. And I wanted to make sure that I could pick it up and the first shot I could put it wherever, you know, exactly where I wanted it on the first shot, cold. So I did a lot. I put as many rounds through that gun the first year I had it as most guys would put through a rifle in their entire hunting career. You know, so it's one of those guns I can just pick it up. I don't even practice with it anymore. I can pick it up and I know when I pull the trigger where that bullet's going to go. It's just awesome. One of those guns. So
yeah, those carry so nicely. Just being able to like wrap your hand around the receiver and just kind of walk mm-hmm. along with them. You can't do that with a bolt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the gun I picked up recently, I haven't really hunted much. I hunted a little bit in the spring with it, but a Norinco M305 and 308. So that I kind of picked up. I wanted just to play around with some longer range stuff. So I'm planning on doing some accurizing to it and see what I can get out of it for sort of mid-range precision stuff. But I did carry that, but it's heavy. It's definitely a stand gun for me.
Yeah, I tried doing the same thing with one of those M305s. I found, you know, there was just too many constellations I was making to the gun, and too many things that just aren't as good in a good bolt action hunting rifle. Like the safety is actually a risk to AD on, because it's within the same plane as the trigger, right? So if you're not really paying mm-hmm. attention to it, you could pull the trigger with it. It's hard to scope. I had to tune the extractor and ejector on mine to get it to fling cases out the right way so it didn't nail the scope mount. Like, do you have a scope mount on yours yet?
No, I just, like I said, I haven't done anything to it
just
yet.
Irons.
It's still stock. So I really like the gun. Interestingly enough, I really like the gun as is. And it shoots like an inch and a half at 100 right now.
Sweet.
With the irons, which is pretty good from what I hear for those guns right out of the box. So... I haven't really thought too much more about it. I kind of know what I want for a look and for a setup, but I just haven't really had the money to put into it. Again, I've got my 30-30 and that's probably my go-to rifle anyway for most things. So I'm not in a big rush.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, especially for 100 yards, 30-30 is just fine.
Yep.
Yep. With we were talking about sights there a couple minutes ago. Would you ever consider putting like a finer front sight on that, Owen, and maybe changing the rear sights out so that you could get a better sight picture on, you know, some of the longer shots? Like Adriel was saying, sometimes it's hard to do with those fat posts.
On the 94, you mean?
Yeah.
On the Winchester?
Or has it gotten to the point where you're comfortable with it the way it is now, you're good to go?
I don't find it bad. Now, I did replace the front sight at one time because I broke the front sight, actually.
Oh.
Early on, but I basically replaced it with the same thing I had in it. Right. I don't know. I don't find it bad. It doesn't have those big tall buck sights.
Right.
Like Adriel was, you know, talking about. It they're not really tall on either side, so I don't find it hard to just kind of see your target, what you're shooting at.
Oh, that's good.
But the front, you know, the front post does fill the rear notch.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I found some of my best shooting happens whenever I have a really fine front sight and actually a fairly big rear notch. When I can see lots of light on either side, I tend to make better shots.
Yeah, well, you can. It's kind of weird, but you can see your target through your sights better.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You know, you're not obstructing what you're shooting at as much with the sight, so it makes sense.
Yeah, which is why scopes, of course, were invented and actually give us the best precision overall anyway.
Exactly.
Well, why don't we talk about scopes just real... Actually, you know what? Before we go any further, Adriel, what's your go-to hunting rifle?
Oh, man, it changes every year.
All right, well, for 2014, then.
for this year, I've kind of got two completely different ideas going. So I'm gonna roll out with two rifles, and one's gonna be short range, just to see how I do with it, and that's gonna be a Mosin Nagant. And that's like my cheapest rifle ever. Is this a good hunting rifle kind of thing? And I'm writing an article on cheap hunting rifles, and you know, so I'm gonna be comparing like the SKS and the Mosin and some of the other like really, really low price options out there. Cause that's, you know, I get a lot of emails from people saying like, what would you recommend for someone who's got $200?
It's like, yeah,
well, that's not a lot of money.
I'd recommend a membership to a range, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of those young guys out there that are just getting into hunting and, you know, what do you recommend? So I'm going to try using the Mosin. I've got one. It's been shooting surplus into, let's say, around 2 inches at 100, which should do the trick.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
And then for my long range, I've actually got a stand that's got range out to, like, it's overlooking a field, and I've got about 700 yards to play with. And I've shot deer at up to that range before, and I'm going to be looking at maybe doing that this year. And to do that, I've got a Savage 10TR that I've borrowed off of a buddy of mine. It's heavy. This is not like an ideal hunting rifle at all, but for a long range, it's I'm getting like definitely sub half MOA.
Wow.
And most of my groups are right around 0.4 inches. So they're on. Like, this thing is smoking accurate. So
what caliber is that in?
That's in 308. And nice. I've got all reloaded ammo, and I've actually just started doing outside neck turning to see if I can squeeze out just a little bit more accuracy at range. And because I just learned about this, I think this year, outside neck turning is kind of where you take away a little bit of material from the case neck to make sure that it's completely concentric all the way around.
Right.
So that its release is the same regardless of which one you're shooting, kind of a thing. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Because if the case is slightly thicker on one side, as the gases ignite, or as the gunpowder ignite, the case expands, right? And if it hits the wall of the chamber a fraction of a second before the other side does, it's going to wiggle the bullet a little bit. And
yeah, the bullet will wiggle. And you'd be surprised, you know, when I ran that trimmer across these cases that, you know, the whole idea is you don't want to pull off a ton of material.
No, you just
want to make it nice and smooth all the way around. And it was surprising with the cases that I had, the difference between one side and the other versus like thick versus thin kind of thing. So those are all done up. And I've even got, since this spot I'm hunting, I go off, and I've got a chart that shows me exactly, like, I can look out the window and I can see this at this tree over here, that's 350, and this tree over here, that's 450.
Nice.
I've got my drop chart for the rounds. So
yeah,
normally I wouldn't shoot anything at, you know, 400 to 600, because the bullet drop is really going to get you off target. But when I know my range and I know my drop charts, then
you're all set. You don't have to worry about it then. Yeah.
Yeah, and as long as you got a good steady rest, it's not a big deal. But
what do you have for a scope on that?
I've got a Bushnell Elite 3-9, but I've also got a 6-18 that I might throw on there for this year. It's just a question of whether I'm going to get enough time to sight in with it and kind of trust it and all that other kind of stuff.
Do they just have a standard reticle, or do you have a ballistic plex type?
The 3-9 that I'd have is just a standard reticle, but man, like, I really love those ballistic reticles, and that's mm-hmm. what the 6-18 has.
Right.
Because it, you know, I don't really like using the adjustment on a scope. I'd prefer to use those hash marks because
Absolutely.
you never know adjusting the scope, whether it's going to move on you, whether it's going to adjust correctly, whereas those hash marks are, they're there and they're not going to move, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So,
unless you're spending, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 in a scope, I don't trust the turrets either. You know, they're made, you know, these are the low end scopes. If you're paying less than $1,000 for a scope, I'm sorry, but it's a low to mid range scope. It's not a high end scope. And I have a Vortex Crossfire on mine. It's a 2-7, but it has the ballistic plex in it. And let me tell you, it works. I use it on a crow in a field. We estimated it to be 250 yards away. And when we went and we paced it off, it was pretty close, but I just dropped two hash marks, put it in between the second and the third, and just blew that thing right in half. Like, it was perfect.
Awesome.
A beautiful shot.
And same thing, I was out in the gravel pit. I was out at just over 350 yards, and I was shooting orange juice containers. There were 1 gallon size jugs. And 350 yards, again, no problem. Just slightly below the third hash, and pow, they're exploding, no problem.
Awesome. Yeah, that's what those things are awesome for. They're nice and quick. You don't need to spend time clicking up and down or figuring anything out.
Count your if you can count to three, you're good to go. And at least, you know, we can count to potato here. That's about it. But, you know, sometimes we can get to three too.
Yeah. So anyways, that's what I'm going to try using this year. I've got some 308 loaded up with, I'm going to try these 175 grain burgers, hunting DLD bullets. So we'll see what those do.
Cool. All right. Well, what about, so you talked a little bit about what, you know, somebody on a budget might want to go after. And like you said, you mentioned the SKS, if they want like a semi-auto or the Mosin Nagant. What other rifles out there? And we've already talked about the Axis. So besides that, I think that's the one most of us would recommend here anyway. But what other options are there out there for lower end rifles for somebody who just wants to get into it? You know, if they haven't really, you know, they're not sure if they want to do this for, you know, forever and spend $1,500 on a gun.
Well, you know, a lot of the guys I talk to think that they have to buy the perfect rifle and they're never going to sell it and they're never going to upgrade it or anything like that.
Yeah,
and
I can tell you right now that doesn't happen. I've been through, I can't remember the number, but it's well over 50 firearms since I started, and it's only been, you know, a dozen years. So, you know, buy and sell, trying to find that perfect one. You never find the perfect one. Just buy what you can that's close and work with it.
Well, I think new
kind of like
the
kind of like women.
Yeah. Buy the most expensive one you can and then work with it. Wait,
well,
what?
You can never find a perfect one.
Okay. There you go. You're lucky, man. Amy doesn't listen.
Yeah, she's home. She's not home.
Oh, perfect. You're set then.
Oh, man. No, I mean, so yeah, a lot of guys think they need to buy the perfect rifle, but they don't realize you can sell a new rifle for damn near what you put into it. So,
absolutely.
Like, yep. There is no big depreciation hit like when you drive a car off the lot. When you buy a rifle, you use it for a year, you can sell it the next year for like $20 less. So
yep.
There's no point in trying to find the perfect rifle. You just work with what you got. And for a beginner, man, like, get that $300. Because I mentioned the SKS and the Mosin, but they suck compared to like a Savage Axis. They're just awful. And that's because, you know, the caliber is better in an Axis, or even, you know, like a Remington 783 or the Mossberg 100 ATR. I mean, those will all get you the 308, 270, 30-06 that you can find in the corner store and have good hunting bullets and are inexpensive. So, like, I would just recommend anyone who's looking at getting into it, just save up that $300-$400 so you can get that beginner rifle that's going to do the job for you.
Yep, that's right. I agree.
And I mean, if you want to talk about rifles that you shouldn't use, like, I think the SKS has a lot of points against it. It's a little bit heavy.
Well, so long as you don't want to, so long as you don't want to actually hit what you're aiming at, I think it's a great rifle.
Well, if you want a rifle that'll do it within 100 yards, you're not going to shoot anything too big. And you want to also use it for your plinking rifle, then yeah, sure, an SKS would be great. You know, you can grab a crate of ammo. It's cheap. You can find soft point ammo for it, but the accuracy isn't all that great. The point of impact changes. There's a lot that it doesn't have going for it.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. Mm-hmm. I guess we'll find out at the end.
Some of that is due to the caliber itself, and some of that is due to the gun as well. Which do you think would be, is it more, all those points that you mentioned, is it more doing with the caliber, or is the SKS as a platform that is the issue?
Platform, definitely. Because, I mean, you could get one of those CZ rifles in 7.62x39, and that would make for a nice, light, recoiling, short, like if you wanted someone who's recoil sensitive to shoot a rifle and smoke a deer in the fall, guess what? Hey, 7.62x39 and a CZ would be fine. But in an SKS, it's just, you know, there's all these platform things that are kind of touchy. Semi-auto is not all the best for a beginner because they don't know if it's loaded or not. Then they muzzle sweep you. And
well, you know what they say about auto loaders is you can have any of the three things. You can have cheap,
You can have any two. You can have cheap, you can have accurate, or you can have reliable. Pick two. That's all you're going to get.
Yeah.
It's either cheap and accurate, cheap and reliable, expensive and accurate, or expensive and reliable. You know, you can't really, you can't have all those. You can't have cheap, accurate, and reliable on the same package. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, going over to the Mosin, I mean, it's got the right cartridge. I think 7.62x54 has got plenty of power for pretty much anything out there. Try using the safety on it. Oh man, that's
is that the one that flicks over the top of the receiver? It's like a great big lug.
No, it's like a big round knob at the back. You got to like rip it, like pull it back with all your might, and then twist it to the left. And I'm pretty sure. Like, I don't even know why it's on there, because I'm pretty sure in the Russian military it would never have used that thing.
Right.
Just keep it loaded. Right.
Yeah. All right.
My brother-in-law shot a bear with the Mosin Nagant. So.
Yeah. So I guess it does work for bears.
It does work. Yeah.
Is it the best platform out there? Well, I mean, an Axis got some modern conveniences in it, right? Better trigger, better scope.
And the new Axises even come with the AccuTrigger now.
Oh, yeah.
Mine didn't. I just have the old-fashioned Axis that has a regular old trigger. I had to do a trigger job on it to get the trigger pull down to an appropriate level. But, I mean, it was easy enough to do. But, you know, now you can just get the AccuTrigger and you're set.
No doubt. Yeah, the rifle. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say that the only good thing about the Mosin Nagant for bear hunting, because you're so close, you can just mount the bayonet and just stab the thing.
Well, it's so long, you don't hardly even have to worry about drop. Just point the barrel right into its belly, and you got him. You know. And then if that doesn't work, you can beat it to death because it's such a heavy gun.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that stock isn't made for comfort, but no. Boy, you could crack some skulls with that.
Oh, it's funny. All right, well, why don't we talk a little bit about different cartridges that might be appropriate for different hunting game. So, you know, October is here, and, you know, the big season is upon us, is deer season, right? So what about deer? What should people be looking at for a cartridge for going after deer?
Well, I mean, like Owen was saying, the 30-30 within 100 yards is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, which different bullet weights have you used, Owen?
I think, well, with the Lever Revolution is 160 grain, I've shot everything out of that gun when I was practicing with it and kind of learning to shoot. Cause like I say, it was my first rifle, but the 160 grain is mostly what I use out of it.
Yeah. Those Lever Revolutions are nice. I'm pretty much doing all deer, and I like the 270 just for it's cheap. It's nice and flat. It doesn't recoil too bad, and it's very available. Like, you can get it pretty much any platform out there.
So 270, that what's its parent cartridge again?
30-06.
And it's just a neck down 30-06. So you imagine that much, you know, because 30-06 is a pretty big cartridge. All that powder back there, but you're pushing a smaller projectile. That thing must just scream.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you're getting a nice flat trajectory. It's carrying its power pretty far out there.
Yeah.
But that said, like, you know, you look at all those popular hunting cartridges. You look at 270, 30-06, 308. I mean, they've got more in common with each other than they do anything else. When you start looking at the ballistics tables on them, they're practically the same. And on game, it's going to be the same as well.
Yeah. I think for somebody starting out, your best bet's probably to go 308. It's very common, very popular, very accurate, just inherently accurate. And you're going to be able to find, you know, exactly which load you want. And if you want to get into reloading, again, tons and tons of data on it. You'll be able to tweak your load just exactly how you want it.
Yeah, exactly. And if you get into, some of the fun semi-auto, rifles and they're in the higher power, then it's good. They're going to be a 308, right? If you get an XCRM or if you get what else is out there? RFB or any of those kind of things.
Yeah, one of those, what is it, the Benelli M1 or whatever? Do they make that in 308 as well, or is that just 223?
No, they make one of those in 308.
Yeah, those are big guns. I didn't realize how huge they were. I was at the gun store yesterday picking up my hunting license. Actually, no, it was 2 days ago now. But they had a VZ-58, which I had looked at a couple months ago. But then right beside it, they had one of those M1s. I'm like, holy cow. I mean, I knew it was a bigger gun, but that thing is massive.
Yeah, I haven't handled any of them. Are they heavy too?
I didn't pick it up, but it looked heavy, I tell you that.
Yeah, it's a thing. Like there's so many different things that keep me from going from semi-auto, and weight is one of them, because you can get a nice 6-pound, 7-pound bolt action rifle, and it'll be accurate all to heck, but it's hard to get that in a semi-auto.
It is. Yeah. Now there's one semi-auto out there that I think would fit the bill perfectly, and that's the AR-15.
Or the AR-10.
The AR-10 would be even better if you're going after deer, but I mean, let's talk about that as a hunting platform for a second. Wouldn't that, I mean, down in the States, it's one of the most, well, one of the more popular hunting rifles, you know, it's getting to be anyway. And here we are stuck up in Canada, you know, limited to shooting them at paper at the range.
Oh man, I'd love to use an AR-15 on coyotes. I've got one that I've got an AR that's, you know, does its inch, and it's got great optics on it, great usability. Man, I'd love to lug that thing out and shoot coyotes with it.
I concur. Yeah, no, we definitely got the short stick on this one.
Have you guys seen the what is it, Alberta Tactical Rifle System, ATRS's Modern Hunter, the platform that they're building out?
Nope.
So they've got something similar to an AR-10. But it's not an AR-10. It's not, apparently they had submitted it a while back, and now it's just got approved. So they're starting to build these things out. So that'll be like an Accurized premium level AR-10, non-restricted.
But yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. Now I wonder if they're going to make one in 223.
Well, they're making them in 308, but they say, they can size the system down to get, kind of an AR-15-ish. Rifle that's still not considered a variant of the AR-15, so it's not restricted.
Well, apparently, so long as it doesn't accept an AR-15 upper, it's not an AR-15 lower. So as long as they make sure it doesn't fit the uppers and make a proprietary upper, then they're good to go.
Yeah, they've got like this proprietary kind of bend to it that's got a slightly different trigger pack, but right. It takes everything else. It takes the grips, it takes the stocks, it takes
Perfect.
A bunch of the other things.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
It's about time somebody got on that and did that for us up here in Canada. I mean, we're all just sit here wait for them to de-restrict the AR, but I think we're probably better off just building something a little bit different. And I think, I mean, Robinson Arms tried it, and it was Robinson Arms, the XCR, it's a pretty good gun, but it's still really heavy. That's the beauty of the AR. It's just such a light gun that, you know, anybody can shoot it, and it can be adapted to, you know, just about any frame.
Yeah, light, accessible, you like... I don't want to say Barbie doll for guys, but man, Barbie doll for guys. You can accessorize the crap out of that thing.
You got it.
Like, yeah. Me and my two buddies, we go do the service rifle or service conditions, and we've got ARs, and they're all different, right? Even though we're started with the same lower, they're all completely different.
Yep. Yeah, that's the beauty about them, is they're just so interchangeable. You want a different this? Fine. Want a different that? Great. Go nuts. They all fit. They all work. Oh, I mean, look at my gun. I mean, mine was donated parts from, you know, a dozen different people from across the country. And they just all sent parts, and they all fit. You know, it's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that'd be really cool to get those non-restricted. But
you're right.
So that happening are.
Yeah. Oh well,
we can use all these other ones that kind of do the same thing, but aren't quite an AR-15, right?
Yeah, it's not quite the same though, is it?
No.
I mean, we had Trevor's SU-16 for a while, and we played with that a little bit, and you know, it was cool, but it wasn't that cool, and it wasn't an AR.
And then, you know, there's the T-97, and that's cool, but then you have to put a different upper on it to get that rail to.
And the thing that kills me with bullpups is the height over bore for the sighting system. Just, you know, it's almost 3 inches on that T-97, which just kills me. It's like, are you serious? Like, you got to wait, you know, almost 75 yards before your bullet even hits zero.
It's like, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And the, you know, the guys that are behind the M14.ca, those guys are working on some other parts for it. So I don't know, maybe they'll fix some of the different usability problems in that platform, like the safety and the mag release. You know, the safety is buried up near your armpit somewhere. And
yeah.
I can't imagine trying to use that while you're, you know, coyote hunting or something.
No, you'd have to pretty much have it unmounted, take the safety off, and then mount it before you could, you know, I don't know if, you'd have to practice a lot, I guess.
Yeah, it's just it's like not as good as an AR-15 when it comes to that stuff, and not. No. I mean, if they were non-restricted, yeah, we could get Norks for $529. We could get the DPMS Oracles that are coming into country now for like right around $550.
Yep,
and
it's
just
amazing the price drop that the ARs have seen in the last month.
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone was trying to get them for a while there. You couldn't get parts for them. You couldn't get uppers. You couldn't get lower parts kits, and now all that production is caught up, and you yep. can see it in the price. The prices are dropping, and I'm hoping the same thing happens with 22 sometime
or
another.
You're telling me, man, I cannot wait for 22 to come back and, you know, the price go down. Fortunately, we've been pretty good where we are out here in New Brunswick. We did see a little bit of the 22 shortage, but it seems to be going away. I'm seeing my favorite brands back on the shelves at Walmart and Canadian Tire again, so it seems to be, you know, we didn't get hit nearly as hard, but, you know, it's still, the prices went way up.
Yeah, I hope we just get the tail end of it, so it's just the surge of supply gets in.
That's
and
right.
Costs yeah. drop, and everyone's got just bajillions of 22 that you can use, and it's available everywhere kind of thing, just like ARs are right now.
Yeah, I remember buying 50 for 99 cents when I was 16. You know, just 99 cents for 50 rounds, like, beauty, I'm in, you know, I just. And then bulk, you know, that wasn't the bulk stuff. Then you get the bulk stuff, and it was even cheaper. So, good times.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right. Well, Adriel, what are you going to close out with? What do you got for us?
In terms of topics or in terms of...
In terms of whatever you like. Well, why don't you tell people where they can go find your interesting writings and pictures and videos and stuff?
I can close out with that, yeah. Maybe not as slick as... What was that guy from the States that was talking? Fast on his Facebook page, and what is it, Fort Knox Safes, that guy?
Oh yeah, Tommy Nelson.
I'm not gonna be as slick as Tommy, but yeah, I mean, you can check out my website at huntinggearguy.com. We've got a YouTube channel as well, and we've got a Facebook page. We're not library beating yet, but I notice you guys don't talk about that anymore. You know, you've kind of gotten past the library stage.
Well, here's what happened is my wife is now working at a different library. And so we don't even care about the old library anymore. You know, she's at a different one now, and they've been closed for a couple months for construction. So I don't even know if they have a Facebook page. So we're just trying to be, you know, everybody else except for them, I guess.
Well, I'm still benchmarking myself against libraries, so if you want to check out my Facebook page and like it over there, that would be a big help as well.
And how do people find that? Just Hunting Gear Guy again?
Yeah, you can search Hunting Gear Guy on Google and get to my website and get from Facebook or YouTube from there.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Adriel, it was a pleasure having you on. We should have you on again sometime, talk some more hunting stuff.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for the opportunity.
Oh, our pleasure.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, well, let's move on to some listener feedback then. And this first one is from 10X. And 10X, I have to apologize to you. This should have been in actually 2 weeks ago, and it kind of got put on the back burner, and then somebody forgot to put it in last week. And anyway, here we are 3 weeks later. Your email's finally making it into the show. So
10X who?
I don't even know who this guy is. 10X somebody or other. Gentlemen, while it seems but a short while since I attended the charity shoot, in reality, a considerable amount of time has passed. You're right, like 3 weeks now since you sent this in. Anyway, the fact is borne out by the seemingly endless amount of episodes of Slamfire Radio that I have had to catch up with. While I do not consider my time away from the Slamfire universe wasted, as it includes... Well, it is wasted, I'm sorry. We're just going to end right there. It's been wasted. No, sorry. As it included many idyllic days at the cottage and a trip to Ottawa that culminated with a flight in a Waco biplane down the Ottawa River and around Parliament Hill, there were some questions that have gone unanswered in my absence. Well, first of all, Peter, I have a question for you. Where was my invitation for this Waco biplane flight? I'm just throwing that out there. Hate you. Is there a difference between pistol, rifle, and magnum primers? Short answer, yes. Long answer, well, I hope you are seated comfortably and Trevor's not reading this aloud for the show. The amount of primer mixture, its specific composition, and primer size are based on the amount of ignition energy required by the cartridge design. In general, pistol cartridges use smaller charges, lower powder density and faster burning powders that can be reliably ignited by a standard pistol primer. Rifles tend to have larger charges, higher powder density, and slower burning powders that require either a larger peak blast pressure resulting in a hotter flame from the primer, or a longer burn time to ignite the larger charge and powder density, and indeed the larger volume of a rifle cartridge. Magnum primers are designed to address similar issues of larger charges of slower burning powders in higher volume cases. Rifle and magnum primers share similar physical compositions in that the primer cups are thicker to handle the increased pressure generated in the cartridge and prevent hot gases from escaping if the primer cup blew out. That pretty much, yeah, that answers my question.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, no, I was, I wasn't going to say it exactly those words, but it was really similar.
Yes.
Anyway, you know, that makes sense. And, you know, if there's a harder to ignite, it's like the difference between gas and diesel. You can take gasoline and just like toss a match in it and woof, there it goes. But if you take diesel, you've actually got to hold the match to it for a second before it ignites. It's, you know, sort of the same thing, I guess. If you have a slower burning powder, it's going to take more primer ignition to set it off. And I can see now why putting a magnum primer in a case not designed for it, if that primer ignites with more pressure, it's going to, that pressure is going to be added to whatever pressure the powder ignites with, and so you're going to get even higher velocities, I guess. So yeah. I guess it all makes sense. So Thomas Donnelly, why didn't you tell me this part? I don't know. we had to wait for Peter. Thank you, Peter. Anyway, he continues on. Here comes the science part. The behavior of smokeless propellants on ignition is described by Peabert's law, which states that burning takes place by parallel layers where the surface of the grain regresses layer by layer, normal to the surface at every point. Yeah, you understand? I understand that. Yeah, absolutely. So, surface shape aside, heat transfer to the surface of the powder is necessary for the propellant to burn or sublimate, and heat transfer rate increases with pressure. Therefore, a higher primer peak blast pressure is necessary for reliable ignition in larger cartridges. I highly recommend Hatcher's notebook for further studies in internal ballistics. Anyway, since the clock has struck beer o'clock, I must take my leave and bid you all a fond farewell till next time. Best regards, your humble correspondent, Mr. Peter Dawson.
Excellent.
That is excellent. Thank you. And I've read some of Hatcher's notebook. In fact, I have a copy of it on my other computer, and I every now and then peruse a chapter here or a chapter there, and it's very interesting, in-depth stuff. Just like your email, a lot of it goes over my head. But yes, thank you. No,
and your shots.
And my shots go over people's heads too, because warning away, that's all I got. No, really good. Thank you. And that does answer my question. And I now understand quite a bit more on how primers work and why there are different types. It's not just a spark is a spark is a spark. There are different sparks, different durations of sparks, and different temperatures of sparks. So it makes perfect sense now. So thank you. From Kyle.
Kyle Owen says, hey guys. You better get Matthew or Owen to read this little chapter of a book I'm about to write. Trevor's head may explode.
That's hilarious because Peter said the same thing.
Yeah.
Sorry, Trevor. It's not that we hate you. It's just that...
He was so worried about his head exploding, he didn't even come on the show this week.
That's right. Listex sticks are teeple poo.
Right.
Right.
And away we go. I just thought I'd keep you up to date on what I've been up to lately. So now he can't get on the show to say what he's been doing with guns this week.
Right.
So he's just going to write. Okay.
Yeah. And look, you said 2 weeks ago here. Sorry, Kyle. You have to limit it to what you did last week, and that's it. I'm sorry. So we're going to have to edit that. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead. Carry on.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be a real hard edit. So
no.
He finishes with, oh, yeah. But that, no.
That's a good edit.
Yeah. So 2 weeks ago, my family went on vacation in Minneapolis, since my dad figured we should all do something together before my sister goes off to Ireland for school. Of course, I had to take the opportunity to do something gun-related, so my dad and I went to Bill's Gun Shop and Range, which is about 15 minutes away from the federal ammo plant. How convenient. I shot a full-auto FN FAL,
I hate
AK-47,
you. I hate you.
And M4.
I really hate you.
Words cannot describe how awesome they are.
And how much I hate you.
The FAL was completely uncontrollable, though I did manage to get 41 out of 50 shots on paper.
So not completely uncontrollable then is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
The AK felt very clunky as it cycled due to the long stroke gas piston design. The M4 was a lot of fun and the recoil wasn't bad at all, even on full auto. But for some reason, a lot of the rounds keyholed.
Interesting. It's because you're holding the gun sideways. You got to hold it straight up and down. Yeah, no, it's definitely that. Yeah.
After that, I shot the SCAR 16S, which I wasn't impressed with at all. Finally, I shot a bunch of handguns, hoping to finally put to rest which will be my first handgun purchase. I shot the SIG P226 first, which was okay in all respects. Accuracy, sights, feel of my hand, positioning of the controls, trigger pull, etc., but not great. The Glock 17 was next. I really like the consistent trigger pull. I think he's talking about as opposed to double action, single action.
Right, yep.
And I was more accurate with it than the 226. Overall, it was my third favorite.
And that's where we end this email.
Yes.
Yeah, if it's not your first favorite, you're out. No, kidding. Sort of.
Then I shot a stainless CZ-75B, which felt great and shot great, but by my poor inexperienced standards. After that, I shot a CZ-SP01 Shadow, which was a bit heavy, but I shot the best groups of the day with it, probably because it was a bit heavy. That's me saying that, not him.
Yeah, yeah.
That was going to be the last gun I shot, but at the counter, as I was returning the Shadow, the clerk asked me which I liked best. Another employee yelled out, "Springfield!" So I decided to try out the XDM. I should have tried the M&P2 now that I think about it, but oh well.
Is that like Beretta 92, the M&P2? Oh, he means as well. Oh,
as
sorry.
As well, yeah. Maybe there was two M&Ps he should have tried.
Ooh, maybe.
The XDM felt pretty good in my hand, but the front sight post was too tall, and I couldn't group worth a darn with it.
Yeah, but the front sight post doesn't affect the size of your group. It only affects where your group is. So, sorry, that's on you.
Sorry, it wasn't the gun. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I didn't care for the I didn't care for the grip safety either, and I don't know if it was a problem with this particular gun or what, but the mag release was extremely stiff. I had to put the gun down on the bench and use both hands just to get the mag out.
I would say that's a feature. If I was selling it, that's a feature, so it doesn't accidentally slide out. Yes.
I would ask if you're built like Matthew, but...
Yeah, oh.
All in all, I spent over $500. You could have bought a gun for that and had a ton of fun, but I'm still no closer to deciding which handgun I want.
I've narrowed it down to 7 different guns. That's hilarious.
Yeah. He goes on to say, I narrowed it down to one of the CZs, which is what I had narrowed it down to before comparing all of these options side by side, and the Glock would be my third choice. Basically, I just cemented my opinions I had about all of these guns before I had a chance to shoot them one after the other.
You just like twisting that knife, don't you? The Glock's just the third choice, guys. Just the third. Yeah. Yeah, no. What's your second? We know your CZ's your first. What's your second?
I think both the CZ's are
both
number
the CZ's
one and two.
Are number one. And number two?
Yeah, I think his SP01 Shadow is number one, and the CZ-75B is number two.
Yeah, I would say it's number two. Glock is the best one. There we go. Anyway, sorry.
Maybe there's like a option 1A or something like that.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
One plus. Plus, like plus PMO. Plus
right.
Anyway, the other we'll never get through this email at this rate. The other big news is, yes, folks, that was not even half of it.
Yeah, we're in the second paragraph now out of what, 7? No.
The other big news is that I bought a Kui Model 60.
Those are good guns.
I've never been a fan of rimfire, but I thought it was about time to get one.
Again, we've got to end the show early. Gosh.
I bought it so I'd have something better to teach new shooters with, or shooters how to shoot with, so I could practice refinishing stocks and rebluing metal, and to serve as a backup so I could eat all of the ammo that my yet-to-be-purchased CZ-858-22 long rifle conversion kit doesn't like. I was going
cool.
to buy the kit this month, but the trip to Minneapolis put the purchase on hold. Of course, now that I've bought it, the Canadian Tires in my area are running low on 22 long rifle. They have nothing over 50 rounds per box, and I managed to pick up some Remington Yellow Jackets, Remington Subsonics, Winchester Super X Subsonics, and Winchester Wildcats. Now they just have Remington Subsonics. And a few days before I bought the Cooey on CGN, they had a decent variety of bricks and bulk packs.
Well, maybe they're just between shipments and there'll be another truck in soon, so
yeah,
I'd go back and check.
Every day. Yep. The wood on the Cooey has already been refinished, but there are some chips in the stock. The bluing is mostly gone, and there are some rust spots. The bore looks excellent, however. Probably going to mount a scope and some sling swivel studs to it as well. I got to shoot out to shoot it today, and it was so much fun. All of my self-healing targets jumped around quite nicely. My friend and I tried shooting the Squirrel's Rifleman Friend's Rifleman Challenge, and because of the open sights, we failed miserably. But it was fun competing against each other nonetheless. I fired almost 200 rounds through it and only had two issues. The case on one of the Winchester Super X's must have ruptured or something, because after the one round, smoke poured out and I could feel soot hitting my forehead.
Yeah, that's generally bad.
Yeah. It ejected okay, though. I stripped it down and checked the bore for obstructions, and everything was good.
That does happen from time to time with 22. They'll get a double charge in the factory. I mean, that sort of thing does happen, and yeah. You did it right. You take it down, you look down the bore for obstructions, you make sure everything's good. But that's the nice thing with 22 is even with a double charge, you're still not going to hurt anything except maybe, you know, stinging eyebrow or something from some unburnt powder. But, you know, just make sure you keep your shooting glasses on. You'll be okay.
Yep. Everything was fine until the very last round of the 200 I brought, maybe 60, 70 rounds later, when one case just wouldn't feed and got stuck halfway into the chamber. We pried it out and it was dented somehow. Oh well, 199 out of 200 wasn't bad. I think I'm in love. It's such an awesome little gun.
And he puts a little heart emoticon there.
Yes.
That's
is that what that
great.
Is?
Yeah. It's it's the less than symbol plus a 3.
Oh, okay. Looks like something
else. It's a sideways heart.
we also shot... I'm going to move right along.
Yeah, move right along.
We also shot Tannerite, which had just recently arrived as well. I bought the 30 quarter-pound targets, so a case of 30 quarter-pound targets. First couple targets didn't explode, and we were puzzled as to why. Maybe we didn't mix them long enough. Maybe we didn't pack them tight enough. Maybe we didn't hit them squarely enough. I'm not sure. But eventually we figured it out somehow, and they started to blow up. We stacked a couple together, and they made some bigger booms. with the way the quarter-pound targets work, you have to pour two of them into a mixing container with one pouch of aluminum powder, and then pour the contents back into the original containers. I guess the aluminum powder took up a lot of space. The ammonium nitrate containers were full to the top to begin with, because by the end of the day we had about a half pound left in the mixing container with nothing to put it in. We only shot 14 of the 30 targets, and I wanted to save the mixing container for later. Luckily, we found a can to pour it in. We put the lid down onto it, stuffed a rock in to hold the lid down, and filled the rest of the space with dirt and twigs. The result was the biggest explosion of them all. We were worried that it wouldn't go off, especially after my friend hit it and knocked it off the bucket it was in. But then he hit it again, and boom. So yeah, the last few weeks have been kind of awesome. Cheers. Kyle.
Sounds like you've been having a good time, Kyle. That was an interesting email. Thanks for sending it in.
And a note on the Tannerite, I did notice that with that it I don't think it's because the aluminum powder takes up more space as much as it's all compacted in those little containers, and when you dump it out and dump it back in, it never compacts in.
Yeah, they must compact it into the original containers or something, the ammonium nitrate, because I found the exact same thing. I've always got leftovers. I've just been using a Ziploc bag to mix it, and what I do with the leftovers is I just hang the Ziploc bag on something and just shoot the Ziploc bag, and it always goes off. So I don't think you need to pack it tight. You just I don't know, maybe you just weren't hitting it square or something. I don't know.
Yeah, we're getting it thoroughly mixed, maybe?
Maybe. You got to make sure every one of those little beads of ammonium nitrate is gray when you're done shaking it. You got to really make sure it's all completely coated. So, but yeah, none of mine have failed to go off yet. It is fun, too.
Yeah, I haven't shot that much of it, actually.
Yeah, it's funny. I haven't really shot a whole lot either. I think I've shot 2 pounds total so far, but I've just been shooting a lot of little targets, so it seems like a lot more. but it's fun. Yeah. We got to get it. It's not like we don't have enough of this, man. We got to get out and shoot some more. Come on. What are you doing on Saturday?
Come
on. Yeah, come on over. I'm at my parents on Saturday for a paintball game. We'll put some special effects in.
Yeah, now you're talking.
Okay, guys, just run over there and try to blow up the tank. Hey, they really blew up the tank. All right, this next email comes to us from Joe. And he writes, new listener coming in from the Armed Squirrels Project. I meet with Styx and Edith. They said to give you a listen. I had a discussion at work that went something like this. Coworker, my cousin told me you can't have guns in Canada unless it's specifically for hunting. They live there, they know. Oh, they live there, they know. And me, you're stupid. So tell me what the real deal is. Thanks, Joe O. Well, Joe, thank you for the blow-by-blow commentary. And you shouldn't insult your friends and call them stupid, but whatever.
Why?
You're right. If he's listening to us, that's all we do with each other. So I
guess
that makes... Shut up. No, you shut up. No, you're a jerk. No, you're a jerk. Knock, knock. No, don't go there. Okay. Yes, we can absolutely have guns in Canada, and no, they do not need to be specifically for hunting. We're allowed to own them for two reasons. One of them is for hunting. Oh, sorry, three reasons. One of them is for hunting, one of them is for target collecting, and one of them is for target
collecting.
No, target shooting and then
there
collecting.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, we do need a reason to own guns here. Well, not really. Non-restricted, you don't need to state a reason when buying a non-restricted. So all of our hunting rifles and shotguns and stuff, you can just go to the store and buy one. There's no questions asked. You, as long as you got a valid license, you just go and buy it. But for restricted firearms, and those are your scary-looking black assaults, military banana clips with 30 rounds, basically cut a man in half. Those, you know, baby-killing, kitten-slaughtering AR-15s and whatnot, those, along with all of our handguns, those are all restricted, which means we can only shoot them at the range. And whenever you get your... And they're registered, too. We have to keep them registered. So you call them up to register your firearm, and they'll sometimes ask you, what is the purpose of this firearm? And you have two options, and if you choose incorrectly, a world of hurt comes down on you. You can either say it's for collecting, which is not the right answer because there's a lot of paperwork involved in getting a collector status. And the second reason is target practice. So you must say target practice, and if you don't, then you're not allowed to have it. So, yeah, I guess he's sort of right, but not really. And, yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of stupid laws in – I mean, there's a lot of stupid gun laws everywhere in the world, but yep. Including the United States. But there's some really stupid ones here.
We have some, really
and they're not just
ones.
Stupid in the fact that they are. How would you say that they don't do anything? They're just stupid in some of the ways they're written, some of the areas and the words, and the way that they're phrased and put together is really haphazard and really makes no sense at all. So,
yep.
But we can still have them, and actually we can get some stuff that they can't get in the States.
That's right. Short-barreled AR-15s, anyone? Yeah. Oh, and how long is the barrel on your AR-15, the little one?
It's all of 7.5 inches.
That's right, and it's completely legal.
Yep.
Meanwhile, we can't have handgun barrels less than 4.25 inches, though, because those are scary and dangerous, apparently. So our handguns all have barrels longer than 4.25 inches or else they're prohibited. So yeah, speaking of stupid gun laws, welcome to Canada. We got a lot of them. Mm. So,
yeah.
All right. Thanks for the email, Joe, and you should apologize to your coworker. Despite what his cousin thinks about us here in Canada.
Yep.
All right. So this next one comes to us from Mark M. He writes, hello, SRF. Well, Mark, we're going to stop right there. It's SFR. So, Slam Radio Fire is not the name of this show. However,
did Trevor write this?
No, maybe Trevor did. Maybe Trevor, are you calling yourself Mark these days? I don't know. He says, hello, and I'm going to fix it for him. Hello, SFR, or shall I say the Gun Wizards? Okay.
Flattery will get you nowhere.
Nowhere at all. In fact, we just make fun of you worse for it.
Yes.
I'm going to cast a level 10 spell and get +3 power on, I don't know, I got nothing. All right. I discovered you guy way back when you first started up, and shortly after I fell off the podcast, due to finding my first home. I'm sorry, Mark. I'm reading all of your mistakes on purpose. Anyway, but now all settled in, I am back to the three wizards again. That's sort of like a haiku right there. But now all settled in, I am back to the three wizards again. Only on episode 26, but with listening to five or more a day, I understand why you can't write properly now. Oh, I'm so sorry.
With every five shows, his IQ drops a little more.
I think it's a point a show you lose. It might even be a point an hour. I'm not sure. That's 1.5 an episode, man. You got to be careful. Oh, okay.
It's,
but with
just like, you know, coke or something or heroin. Not the addiction part. It's just that.
Yeah, it just kills your brain cells. All right, so with listening to five or more a day, it will only be a matter of time before I catch up. Big thanks to you guys for a couple of things. A. No, that's a sentence. It's comma A and then a period. Okay. I have to sell my Sud 2000 for a Glock 17. No ifs, ands, or buts. I still need to take the Glock for a test run at Calgary Shooting Center, which... And he spelled that like the one that flies in a broomstick, which is appropriate because Halloween is coming up. I am a member at, but from your conversations from it, I think this will be a good idea. B. After getting my Glock, I would like to get it right back into competition. Okay. As hearing you guys talk about your matches makes me want to get back into it again. I used to shoot service rifle with Hungry from CGN about 5 years ago. And finally, C. Find a gun range close to Calgary that I can run, jump, slide, advance, and practice a service rifle. Thanks for the good times while I work away at my job and for keeping my mind on the gun prize. Ron Burgundy out. All right, then. I am sorry, Mark. A little bit.
Yes, he is. He better be.
So, yeah, that's cool. You don't have to sell your Sub 2000 or your Sud 2000, I guess.
I would just, if it was me, I would keep it and buy Glock 17.
Yeah, especially if it's a Glock Mag Sub 2000.
That's right.
Keep it. Maybe budget's a little bit tight. Well, look on the EE on CGN. I'm sure you'll find a pretty good deal on one. But yes, get a Glock for sure. Don't be a Kyle and get a CZ. They are number two. Get a Glock. So, and then, getting back into competition. Good idea. It's lots of fun. Just do it. And finding a gun range where you can run, jump, slide, and that stuff. Look in the rural areas. Mm-hmm. Anything in town or close to town, you're probably going to find, it's a built up area, lots of people, you're probably going to find a lot of stringent gun rules and stuff, or range rules. So you're probably going to want to look sort of in rural, smaller town areas, look for a gun range out there, especially one that doesn't have a lot of members, where when you go to the range, oftentimes you're the only one there. I'm fortunate enough to belong to three gun ranges that are all like that. So I can go to almost any of them. Almost any time of the day, year, and I'm by myself. So I can do whatever I like as long as I don't break any rules. So it's, look for those things if you can. If you can't, well, good luck. So anyway, thank you for writing in. I am sorry. Sort of. All right, next one from Mickey.
All right, Mickey.
Hey, Mickey, you're so fine. You're so fine, you blow my mind. Hey, Mickey, that one? That Mickey? Hey, Mickey.
I was going to go M-I-C-K-E-Y-M-O-U.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
We're going to have... Oh, that was good. We're going to have no listeners by the end of this show. None. Trevor's going to come back and go, what did you guys do?
You guys broke it. You broke the podcast. Yes, we did. To be fair, though, it was Ron Burgundy's fault.
Yes.
Okay, from all Mickey. Right.
Mickey says, gentlemen, big fan.
Not anymore.
I listen to your podcast every week while reloading or cleaning guns in my man cave. My question is mainly for Trevor. Too bad he's not here. As I know, he used to be a Glock fanboy before he drank the 1911. That's his problem. He drank a 1911.
That's a comma. It's not a period.
I mean, 2011 Kool-Aid. I just bought my first Glock, which is the new Glock 41. Where did you buy all your Glock parts from, and what do you recommend for upgrades? I plan to possibly use this gun for standard division. I own and shoot 1911s in Classic Division and am a total Glock newbie. The reason I went with the Glock 41 is that I reload and cast for 45 and do not want to gather all the stuff to reload 40, but I still want to be major power factor. Thanks for your input and keep up the good work, boys.
From Mickey Mann is how he signed
Mickey
it.
Mickey Mann. Oh, okay.
Mickey Mann.
Not
anyway,
Mickey Mouse. Mickey
Trevor Mann. Did reply to him, and I copied that reply and pasted it into the show notes because it's interesting stuff. So Trevor wrote back to him. He says, hey, first, thanks for listening. And Owen and I say, we're sorry that you are. If you're going to shoot lead in your Glock, you should get a cut barrel. Don't cut your barrel. You need... Look, Glocks have polygonal rifling. You need to get your traditional Lands and Grooves cut barrel, not a polygonal rifling. So Glock says it's a no-no to shoot lead out of their barrels due to the rifling they use. However, some people get away with it by cleaning and de-leading the barrel often. I'm with Trevor. I believe, what's the name of that company that does the Lone Wolf? Lone Wolf. Go to Lone Wolf. I'm sure they have aftermarket barrel that, and they use the traditional Lands and Grooves to cut barrels, the cut barrel rifling. That's the kind you want. He says, as for aftermarket parts, I get, I'm going to read his properly, I guess. I get all mine from Glock Works. I love the Zev product line. Here's what to get. Fiber optic front sight from Dawson Precision. I concur. Fiber optic front sights are great. Zev trigger kit. Toss the steel skeletonized striker and buy a titanium striker, normally found at the Glock store. Then get a full-length tungsten guide rod, not the one with the captured spring. Start with a 15-pound recoil spring. Don't go lighter than 15 pounds. The gun will bust pins if you do. Trust me on this one. Yeah. I've seen it happen. So, yes. Heavy tungsten magwell. Good luck with this one. I had a heck of a time finding a magwell for my Gen 4 Glock 21 SF, and when I did, it wasn't tungsten. And then he says, get an extended mag release from Zev. That's it. It should only cost you about $1,000 for all of it.
Wow.
So, I think that includes the gun? Maybe not.
No.
I don't know.
I don't think so. I mean, a barrel is probably several hundred dollars, so.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yep. Beauty. All right. Well, be sure to check out both of our National Firearms Associations, the CSSA and the NFA. Please join them both. Please contribute to both of them. If the recent provincial elections that have been going on are any indication as to the federal election results, we need to do some stuff quick before the Liberals get in. So join the NRA, join the NFA,
join the NRA too.
You can join them too if you like, but keep your money in Canada if you can. You know, support our organizations, make sure we preserve our gun rights, what little we have. Let's keep them and forge forward and get more. Please also check us out on the Gun Owners of Canada web forum. We post our show there and there's comments sometimes. Also, please go ahead and hang out with us on Facebook. And while you're there, click that little like button if you haven't already. Lots of cool stuff happens on our Facebook page, so be sure to check that out. Also, check out the other great shows on the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network, as well as the Crusader Podcast Network. There's really good shows on both of those. Lots of good stuff to listen to. So check them out. Tell them we sent you. I don't know who you're going to tell, but just whatever. I don't know. Somebody's Ron Burgundy. Owen.
Yes.
How'd you like the show?
Show was good. It was great. Good.
Yeah.
It was full of laughs. And
right.
I think I'm watching the likes on our Facebook page drop as we speak.
Beauty. Beauty. All right. Well, how are we going to sign off this week?
Well, you've wasted another hour and a half of your life.
Yes, you have.
Don't shoot like Matthew.
And don't shoot like Owen. I'm so glad you get that.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.